Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, perfection renunciation, text number 13. Panchayatani Mahabaho, Karnanini Bodhame, Sankhye Kritanti Proktani, Sudaye Sarvakaramanam. Pancha, five, etani, these, mahabaho, a mighty armed one, karnani, causes, nibodha, just understand, may, from me, sankhye, and the Vedanta, Kritante, and the conclusion, Proktani, said, Siddhaye, for the perfection, Sarva, of all, Karmanam, activities. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Almighty armed Arjuna, according to the Vedanta, your five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. Purport. The question may be raised that since any activity performed must have some reaction, how is it that the person in Krishna consciousness does not suffer or enjoy the reactions of work? The Lord is citing the Vedanta philosophy to show how this is possible. He says that there are five causes for all activities, and for success in all activities, one should consider these five causes. Sankhya means the stalk of knowledge. Vedanta is the final stalk of knowledge accepted by all leading acharyas. Even Sankara accepts Vedanta Sutra as such. Therefore, such authority should be consulted. But the ultimate control is invested in the Supersoul. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Savasya Jaham Riddhi Sanavishta. He is engaging everyone in certain activities by reminding him of his past actions. And Krishna consciousness, acts done under his direction from within, yield no reaction, either in this life or in the life after death. Panchaitani Mahabaho Karnanini Bodhame Sankhye Kritanti Proktani Siddhye Sarvakaramanam. Almighty armed Arjuna, according to Vedanta, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. Krishna, in the summary of the 18th chapter, he's explained about karma yoga, doing one's sacrifice, charity, and penance for Krishna. Now he's going to explain about jnana yoga. What is the soul doing in the material body, and why he becomes entangled, and how he can work in such a way as not to become entangled. Entangled means to be entangled in the material concept of life. In other words, our identification with this body and the mind is our entanglement. So there's certain work that will free us from these misconceptions, and there are certain activities which will bind us to these misconceptions. So Krishna is explaining here that it's not a question, as he'll go over, that adishtanam tata karata karanam chapritag vidan vividas chapritag chesta dayam chayvatma panchama. There are five kinds of activity, there are five causes for any kind of activity, beginning with the body. In other words, one needs a body to do anything. So we all have a body, but that's not sufficient. We also need senses. If we can't see, it's very difficult to do anything. If we can't walk, it's very difficult to do anything. And not only that, we need adishtanam tata karata, we need a soul inside the body. So we're the soul inside this body. But even that's not sufficient. We need endeavor, we need energy. We need the energy so that when the soul desiring, plus the super soul, Because the super soul is the one who's in charge of the material energy. We're not in charge of the material energy. Material energy means not only the gross and subtle material bodies, but also the energy that allows the body to work. So we're not in charge of any of that. Krishna is in charge of the material energy. Therefore, our senses and our subtle body doesn't work independently, nor does the energy that we have work independently. It's all directed by Krishna. He's directing his material energy in different ways, but according to the desire of the living entity. In other words, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had said that Nichamatani Karmani Nivanandi Dhananjaya Udasinad Varasi Namasaktam Teshu Karmasu, that all this work cannot find me, I'm ever detached, see it as though neutral. In other words, although Krishna is neutral, he's like the judge. He's simply noting down what we deserve and noting down what we desire and arranging accordingly. So Krishna is not responsible, just like a judge. If someone comes before him, he may award them a huge amount of money. Or he may condemn someone to death. So the judge is not really responsible for the good or the bad decisions that are made. It's on the basis of the person, what they did. They did something good, he might receive some reward. If he did something which is not so good, he might get some punishment. So similarly, we are working according to our desire. According to the desires that we choose, because we're not, desire is a subtle form of conditioning of the living entity. We're not even capable of creating our own material desires. These are being supplied to us. That the material nature is giving us possible desires, but that's arising according to our past association. For instance, according to what we've done in the past, we've developed certain desires. And according to what we're doing in the present, we're also developing certain desires. Now, if one is simply acting to the modes of material nature, there is going to be desires arising according to the modes of material nature that's occurred in the past. If we acted in passion in the past, we're going to have a lot of passionate desires now. That's called karma. If you want to find out what your karma is, find a good astrologer. And he can tell you all what kind of desires you're probably going to have in the present. Now, there's something called mercy also. In other words, we have an opportunity to develop another set of desires outside of the possibility of developing material desires. Now, in the material world, there is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Krishna is supplying them. And in Shastra, anyone who has the opportunity to follow Shastra can dovetail their desires to gradually become purified, according to Shastra. In other words, the scriptures give opportunities for people in the different modes of material nature to gradually be elevated. But nowadays, no one cares for those things. Even if they'd care for it, where would you find out how to be elevated from ignorance to passion following the scriptures? It's just not current. There's no system to do that. Nor is there even a system to work in goodness. How many people do you know are working in goodness in the material world? You'd starve to death. People don't. And even people who wouldn't starve to death, still they don't really incline to act in goodness. They have all the time in the world. Generally, most people misuse it. Therefore, there is a possibility of acting in Krishna consciousness to elevate oneself to a higher level of desire. In other words, if we hear from the scriptures and we accept what Krishna says and we agree to do what Krishna says, this is all based upon desire. In other words, we're understanding what Krishna wants, we're accepting what Krishna wants, we want to do what Krishna wants. And then, actually, all we're doing is desiring, and then Krishna makes all the arrangements. The problem is that we think ourselves to be the doer, independently of Krishna. And therefore, we think we're free to do whatever we want to do, including doing something for Krishna. But then we think we can do whatever we want to do outside of Krishna consciousness, too. And therefore, our consciousness is rather cloudy. We don't see exactly what's taking place. Sometimes we think Krishna is the controller, and sometimes we think I can do whatever I want. And therefore, everything is quite confusing for us. And then again, we're suffering the reactions of our past activities, called karma, which Krishna, of course, is for a devotee, aspiring devotee. He's regulating the karmic reactions, but we may not understand that. We may think it's just arbitrarily coming, and we, instead of seeing in Krishna in relation to Krishna, we see it in relationship to our own happiness or distress. And therefore, we become even more confused. In other words, to understand the value of desire being dovetailed in Krishna's service in the nine processes of hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna, that we're voluntarily desiring to do that, and therefore when we're doing that, we're freed from the reactions, because this is what Krishna wants us to do. And then forgetting what Krishna wants us to do and doing something else, and expecting we won't be implicated. In other words, unless we can understand the difference between desiring for Krishna and desiring outside of Krishna, then the result is that sometimes we'll think we're making progress, and sometimes we may be unaware of actually what we're doing, what we're doing. The results don't mean simply the immediate results, because if one acts in passion, then gradually one will become degraded into ignorance, generally speaking. And if one acts in ignorance, one will certainly go down to further ignorance. So often we don't see the downward spiral for not following Krishna's advice. Maya just has to attract a little bit, just like they had that picture in the old Bhagavad Gita's where there's a staircase. Have you seen that? Have you seen that picture? There's a staircase, and then there's a lady devotee inviting everyone to go upwards on the staircase to meet Radha and Krishna. And then there's another lady inviting everyone down, enticing everyone down to the lower modes of material nature. So Maya is just like that. Maya never says, "My dear soul, just do a little bit and that's all." That's all she says. She says, "Oh, just deviate a little bit, it'll be all right. No worries. You have enough strength and intelligence that you'll stop. You'll know when to stop." It's like you're sleeping, the alarm goes off, Maya says, "Oh, you're a little tired. Just take 5 minutes left. Rest. Don't even bother with your alarm. I'll wake you up." And 2 hours later, you wake up and you go, "Maya, why didn't you wake me up?" She said, "Well, I fell asleep too." Or you're having the feast, and Maya says, "Well, just take one more. It's all right. You'll be satisfied, you know. Don't worry." And you take one and you go, I'm even hungry. "All right, take one more. It's all right. You deserve it." And after the, "Oh, I'm sick, you know, why did you tell me?" "Oh, I'm sorry, you know. I'll do better next time." So Meyer never says, "My dear soul, just deviate a little bit and I'll send you to hell. I'll just bring you down as far as I can until you're completely smashed." No, she says, "Oh, just a little bit, it's all right, you know, you need a break, you deserve it. You can't be so strict." "Don't be so conservative, you know." So Maya will give us so many good instructions, and then Krishna's trying to give his instructions too, but we have to spend the time hearing Krishna's instructions. Otherwise, as soon as we stop hearing Krishna's instructions, Maya's instructions to us become louder and louder and louder, and more persistent. And therefore, to expect that, for instance, even devotees, quote, aspiring devotees, when they come to the Krishna consciousness movement and they don't spend time every day reading Prabhupada's books and practicing sadhana, that they're going to last very long outside of Maya. It's impossible. It's just not. As I said before, it's like, could you imagine your diet was that you didn't eat anything for a whole week? And then once a week on Sunday you had a big feast to make up for it? How healthy would you be? Therefore the Bhagavatam says, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna. What is this hearing? This hearing is simply meant to develop our desire, that's all. And how is our desire developed? By first of all seeing things, understanding what's going on. If you knew that if you opened the wrong door, a hammer would come out and knock you out, you wouldn't have much of a desire to open the door. You'd rather open the door with nice roses and nice songs. But if you don't know what door to open, you may open any door. And if the door with a hammer is painted very nicely, welcome, you know, we invite everyone to open this door. This is exactly the door that, you know, it matches your dhoti. So Maya never advertises, you know, come here and I'll smash you, you know, you'll be destroyed and you'll be in pain for the rest of your existence. No, Maya says, no, here's nice roses and birds are singing, open the door, and then the hammer comes out and smashes you. So unless we learn proper discrimination by hearing constantly, because right now we're in the state of being under the illusory energy. So it's not a question that suddenly I'm Krishna conscious and I'm going to lose my Krishna consciousness. No, we're hardly conscious. What to speak of Krishna conscious? Right now, under the spell of Maya, we're influenced by the illusory energy in the form of ignorance, especially in Kali Yuga, and some passion, and maybe a little goodness we've developed along the way. So as soon as we stop hearing, then immediately, you know, we're in ignorance, and the tendency is we'll start acting in ignorance because we'll forget what we've heard. And only when we actually hear constantly and then we start acting according to what we heard, then when Krishna gives us some realizations, some understanding, then we become more inclined to go forward. But as soon as we stop, then Maya will simply start bringing us backwards again, wherever we stop. So there's not really very much choice in Kali Yuga. Either we go forward and develop a desire to obtain Krishna by hearing, trying to understand and practicing, or Maya will take us back. She'll take us back and back and back, and then we'll think we have, you know, Krishna consciousness, will just be forgotten. Just like Daksha, when he prayed to Krishna in his second incarnation, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. When Krishna came, he was overwhelmed with ecstasy, the pleasure of associating with Krishna in the form of Vishnu. After Daksha offered very beautiful prayers to Krishna, Krishna came riding the back of Garuda, and Daksha was in so much ecstasy he could hardly stand up. But then, because his reason for praying to Krishna was he wanted to have unlimited sex life, when Krishna asked for what kind of benediction do you want, he said, give me unlimited sex life. So that's what he got. He was in ecstasy one moment, completely in bliss and happiness, and then he simply asked for highest material pleasure. He completely forgot. So Krishna Surya Maya Andhakar. So Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness. As soon as we forget Krishna, then immediately there's darkness. Maya doesn't say, I'll wait a few minutes, you know, are you sure you wanted to make that choice? No, we make the wrong choice. Krishna will go, beep, beep, you made the wrong choice. We're going, leave me alone, Krishna, you know. And then, you know, after a while, the beep, beep goes away. We don't hear Krishna anymore. And we start justifying why he made this choice. then we start believing I made the right choice, and there was no such thing as Krishna. There's no other alternative. So the conclusion is our desire is very precious. Only by hearing constantly, but consistently, I can't say constantly, consistently developing some sadhana to hear about Krishna, whether in the temple or outside the temple. And that hearing about Krishna is not just hearing about Krishna carrying a flute and dancing with the gopis. Specifically for us, it's exactly what I'm supposed to do with this body to serve Krishna in any circumstance. That's the first thing we have to know. Am I acting in Krishna's service or am I acting in Maya's service? What about my thoughts? Am I thinking about Maya? My own material happiness and my material distress? Or am I thinking about serving Krishna? And what's the difference and how to change it? What about my speaking? Am I speaking about Krishna? Am I talking, communicating in relation to Krishna? Or according to my illusory conceptions of who I am and who everyone else is? That's the most important thing to hear about. To dovetail our present existence in Krishna's service. Otherwise, we may hear lofty, lofty topics about Krishna, but as soon as we stop hearing those topics, we're back doing the wrong thing, thinking the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing, and it's almost like it was just a dream hearing about Krishna. Sounds nice, but unless we put ourselves practically with what we have now in Krishna's service, hearing nice things about Krishna won't help us very much. Only if it inspires us to actually do something practically with our present body, with our present mind, with our present words, then it may be helpful. Otherwise, it's just like, the example is, you know, the elephant bathing. It goes into the water and bathes itself very nicely, but when it comes off out of the water, it immediately throws dirt all over its body. What's that? So hearing about Krishna, even in these kirtan, nice kirtan, I mean, they're very nice. It's something positive. But if we don't learn how to utilize, act dutifully in terms of our present position in the material world, at least in the mode of goodness, and to develop our Krishna consciousness, then it's just like, you know, it's like you may fast for the whole, you know, you may have a nice, eat some nice candy sometime, but it's not a very, it's, you actually have to have a steady, healthy diet in order to become healthy. So unless one works consistently in Krishna's service with the right conceptions, we may get some satisfaction temporarily and actually experience how nice Krishna consciousness is with nice kirtan, nice hearing about Krishna, nice prasadam. But if we throw dirt all over our body afterwards, it's not going to help us very much. It won't bring us to the higher levels of Krishna consciousness, where we can actually get free from our misconceptions of life. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Don't. There's no microphone.
You said one point that we do not make our material desires, but it comes from the mind.
It comes from association. Just like now we're here, we're talking about Krishna. So if we're listening, it enters into our mind and it gets stored away. So under certain if we actually, there's different processes of assimilating the knowledge versus just merely hearing. So we can test if we've actually heard anything with any attention, we should be able to remember it. We can't remember it, it means that we haven't really listened very carefully, taken it seriously, enough to remember it. Now if we can remember it, now we have to perceive it, what's actually it's saying. We have to analyze and see what its relevance to my life is, what I can practically do on that basis, so I can serve those instructions. So that gets deeper into the intelligence and the possibility of manifesting further into the mind is there, if it's deeper into the intelligence. And then we have to actually act according to it, especially in terms with conviction, especially according to the services outlined. In other words, when the instructions become deep enough under any circumstance or most circumstances, we can actually follow the instructions. That's called conviction. They're not under different circumstances, we just don't forget and do something else. Then, when it's even more deeply into our consciousness, then we skillfully act in terms of the devotional services we perform, especially the six loving exchanges with the devotees, or our attention to the deities, or our determination to spread the Sankirtan movement. Then we become skillful in some service to Krishna, especially to the Sankirtan movement. And then when it becomes further deep, then it becomes part of our nature, it becomes our character. And we can't deviate. We have no other desire except to serve Krishna. So that depends upon how much we've heard, how deeply we've assimilated, how deeply we've practiced, and how deeply we've become absorbed in Krishna's service. So therefore Krishna says, if you can't fix your mind upon me without deviation and engage all your intelligence in me, then practice the regular principles of bhakti yoga, and this way try to develop the desire to obtain me. So there's a process of developing that desire, from knowledge to perspective to conviction to skills to character. Yes. What's that?
Sometimes we face with an argument saying that I am not in control of my actions, so they are all dictated by the three conditions.
Well, that's probably quite unfortunate.
I am not in control of my the desires, so why I am guilty, everything is...
Because you are, you're responsible. Just like if you have a choice to turn right or turn left. And if you turn left, then you fall into a boiling pool of oil. And if you turn right, then you turn into a beautiful swimming pool. So someone says, take your choice. Do you want to turn right or left? You say, well, I don't really care. I'll just spin around wherever I wind out. Then you have a choice. So you have to take the choice. Either we serve Krishna, we desire to serve Krishna, and then Krishna will arrange that our senses and mind will be controlled and engaged in His service under His internal energy. Or we choose not to serve Krishna, and then we're under the three modes of nature. And yes, in any case, we're being controlled. But we have a choice, either be controlled by Krishna or controlled by Maya. That's our choice. Yes.
How to chant with concentration without any other thoughts?
Practice, suitable practice and detachment. That comes with Krishna by experience. First of all, by hearing about Krishna, hearing about what the process of developing attachment for Krishna is through devotional service. Hearing about the 10 offenses against the holy name, so how to avoid them and practice positively pure devotional service. So it's a science. We have to learn how to chant with attention and with feeling. But that comes from gradually doing regularly, chanting a prescribed number of rounds a day, and then trying to learn the science of chanting with attention and with some feeling. So that has to be learned gradually. And it's based upon, sometimes, it's also based upon the realizations, the intelligence Krishna will give us. But Krishna says, I give thee the intelligence how to come to me according to how steady and how enthusiastic one is about the process of devotional service. So according to how steady and how enthusiastic we are about chanting, Krishna gives us the intelligence how to improve the chanting with more concentration, with more feeling. So we have to take the opportunity when we're chanting to make an effort to chant with attention, with feeling. And if we make that effort, Krishna will help us. And if we just chant and expect it's all going to come automatically, it won't come automatically. Unless we can learn what the 10 offenses are and how to avoid them, unless we make the effort to do so, then it's very difficult to make any progress. You know what the 10 offenses are? Yeah, so you should learn with the ten. You should learn. They used to recite them every day, but you should learn what the 10 offenses are. In any case, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Chant to Srimati Radharani and Krishna, asking to engage in their loving service. And if you think that that's what I'm doing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you just do that, then Krishna will help. But all everything we're doing here, everything we're talking about, is all meant to help us chant with more attention and with more feeling. And therefore, anything we do to progress in devotional service will help us chant more attentively and more feelingly. Yes?
Maharaj, can you give us some highlights when the new people come? They usually think that, you know, it is like sense of already saturated beat, you know, sent to German, so he doesn't understand what that means. And for them, they think like, you know, I can, you know, just, you know, chant one round a week and, you know, that's enough for spiritual life for me. So how to convince such a person in the beginning that, you know, please take this chanting seriously, read and chant.
Well, everyone needs association. If we think anyone who doesn't have a devotee association during the week is going to be able to maintain himself in Krishna consciousness, it's just not possible. You have to have regular meetings, small groups. You have to have friends who are Krishna conscious. You have to have constant encouragement. Or else if we have bad association, we'll forget Krishna practically immediately. I mean, even practicing for 20, 50, 100 years, we don't have good association, we forget Krishna. What to speak of a regular person?
It's hard to take him away from
you. Well, we can't take him away. We have to give him they have to have some kind of piety to come to the first place and some desire. And it's a higher taste. Generally, people come because they like the prasadam and they like the music. Or if they make a friend, people will stay if they make friends. So be friendly to people. What's that? Yeah, to be friendly. People, they join because they like the philosophy or they like the music, or but they stay because they have friends. Yes.
So the same question, I have an experience that sometimes visiting holy places make an incredible effect on the person. I have a friend, just because of our friendship, he came with me to Vrindavan. After that, he changed dramatically. He couldn't do a lot of things, but after Vrindavan, somehow, for mercy of the Vrindavan.
That may last for some time. The holy place is one of the five powerful processes to devotional service. And a lot of association with the holy dham and the devotees there, you know, it may change. But not necessarily permanently. Because the impression is there for some time, but then one gets overwhelmed by bad association. Because we're associating with adhammas, unholy places. They also have an effect on us. Kuala Grantara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.